know you rock when you roll with the Seahawks. Marshawn Lynch, beast mode with his dreadlocks. Wilson passes the ball to the end zone, touchdown. You know we're gonna get the crown in Super Bowl 24. Team, we get the ring, the bling, listen to the crowd sing. Seahawks, Seahawks, Seahawks. We block that offense, to say we'll lose is such an offense and nonsense. We got the best defense, being the other quarterback comes with the expense of the act of being sacked. I hope the Broncos have enough time to react to the level of game the Hawks are bringing that evening, a Super Bowl Sunday, cause they're gonna go all the way for the win, starting when the game begins, all the way to the end of the game, and to go down in fame as the Super Bowl champions of this year. This team should be feared.
You better saddle up when you roll with Seattle. Broncos seem like some old cattle left in the field after cutthroat battle. To the Hawks, they just kick
all
the
right.
Just run away.
Welcome, everybody, to the No Point Conversion, a sports-related podcast centering this time of year largely around the Seattle Seahawks and the Cleveland Browns. If it ain't brown and orange, it don't matter, according to one Freddie Kitchens. I'm Luke Burbank. That's Andrew Walsh over there. Hello, my friend.
Hello. Did you like my Freddie Kitchens cosplaying photo that I sent you yesterday?
I mean, the answer to that question has almost never been yes in probably human history. But yes, I did. It was actually a fun day because both of our teams won, which is kind of rare. And so it was, it was a good day. Both teams, it would seem, played inferior teams.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the Browns, from what I was able to monitor, looks like the Browns actually did more like what we would have wished the Seahawks would have done, which the Browns jumped out to a quick lead. They showed themselves to be superior to the Dolphins. The Seahawks kind of let Philadelphia hang around, a very diminished Philadelphia team. We can talk about the Browns in a minute. Let's just keep rolling with this white hot Roxino hotline Seahawks talk. So the Seahawks won 17-9 over Philadelphia. I think we were texting around on the Fun Loving Criminals before the game that this could be, in the words of Baby Yoda, a trap game because...
Oh, famous layers. Baby Yoda. Famous Baby Yoda.
Layers. Quote. So many layers to that joke. That's what people tune into the No Point Conversation. Or even Conversion, as it's called in some places. So I think we were kind of like... Somebody, you thought you'd maybe heard someone say, don't overlook Philly. And I think the response from most of us was, oh, we're not overlooking. If anything, we're sort of terrified.
Yeah. Let me just clarify. I was flipping through satellite radio, and I heard on one day three different commentators just kind of like just listening to various things. Somehow like kind of talking. They weren't even talking about the Seahawks. They were talking about the Eagles. I think this would have been the Monday or Tuesday after their painful loss to New England last week. Mm-hmm. And so they were just talking about the fate of the Eagles, and they're saying, the Seahawks are going to come down and they're going to beat the Eagles. And then what is the rest of their season going to look like after that? And I heard several people do that. And I'm thinking, does the nation just assume that the Seahawks are going to beat the Eagles? Because I kind of felt nervous going into this week. And so I wanted to see if I was out of line or if the nation, if those broadcasters were out of line. And you guys all answered pretty vehemently. No, this could go south for the Seahawks pretty easily.
Yeah, because even though the Eagles don't have the greatest record this season, they went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago and won. They beat the Patriots, and they've got a lot of those elements still. And so, and you're playing in Philadelphia. It's like it's just you can't overlook that team. And so, I think your nervousness was right. Now, when the game actually rolled around, Carson Wentz was really working with he didn't have Aguilar, he didn't have. I'm forgetting he was like missing basically his top two receivers. So it became apparent pretty quickly that the Seahawks were a better team and were able to put a lot of pressure on Wentz. And Wentz is not looking so hot lately anyway, just in terms of his accuracy and stuff. But what was frustrating about the game was we didn't put it away. And that's always scary when you go into the second half and you think, well, what if they get hot for one drive here? And they were turning the ball over at a comical pace were the Philadelphia Eagles. So that was also helping us. Whatever. We won the game. It doesn't matter. I did find it frustrating. We asked for it. I mean, we got some lousy calls that were, legitimate in the sense that we committed the infractions. With the exception of, I think there was a, I was listening to it on the radio because I was going from the hotel down to where I watched the game, the second half of the game down in Playa del Rey. And so I was listening. There was one penalty that was called, I think it was on Tyler Lockett. It was a pick they called him for a pick play, and the Seahawks radio announcer seemed very, very, very like sort of dismissive of that call. I didn't see it, but they said. But other than that, the calls that went against us, it seems like they were. There were things we really did, but there were also – a lot of them were the kind of calls that I felt like the officials can either enforce it or not enforce it. And they seemed to be enforcing it a lot against the Seahawks. And midway through the third quarter, they had called zero penalties on the Eagles, which I kind of thought – like I can't – I don't believe that the Eagles have committed no penalties. I believe that you've just been deciding to not throw the flag on those moments for whatever reason. So there was a – it was a weird game because the Eagles just kept trying to give it to us. And we just kept not taking it from them. And then finally we pulled away, but I didn't feel very comfortable about this game up until probably, you know, the fourth quarter.
Yeah, they gave up three fumbles, and those are just the ones they gave up. I believe they recovered. I know they recovered at least one, if not two. I think he threw two interceptions as well, and so they had five turnovers versus the Seahawks' two turnovers. It was frustrating because it did seem like they just kept handing it to us on a silver platter, and we couldn't get anything done, which goes to my perennial question to you. Was that a testament to the Eagles' defense? From you following the game, was it a testament to our just weak offense?
I think the weather was a little bit tricky. I mean, Metcalf had two key drops. One of them was a play that would have been a big first down, and it's a hard catch. He's jumping and twisting, and yet, you know, you're a professional receiver. That's a catchable ball for you. And then the one in the end zone was just kind of like when you're trying to field a pop fly. And it's like windy, and it's just like the ball's moving around. I wasn't crazy mad at him about the dropped touchdown because it was just, I think that the wind affected that. There was that very weird play where Russell just missed Hollister, like just completely and totally threw the ball over his head. I think it was because Russell could have run the ball in, or he could have thrown it, and I think his body just like locked up and he was sort of running it and throwing it, and that was a bad combination. It's also funny because when you're not on the field, I think we forget how far even these short throws are, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, like if you and I were just standing in a field somewhere.
Yeah, it would be not that close, even though it looks like I thought, look, Russell Wilson can literally hand the ball to Hollister here. They're that close. It's like, no, they're probably like, you know, 15 to 20 yards from each other, if you account for Hollister being in the end zone. I mean, Russell wasn't on the 15, but you know what I mean? It's like, I think the distance is kind of confusing to the eye as a TV viewer. Because when I kept watching the replay, I was like, well, Russell was – how did he not just like literally like lateral it to him at that point? But it was a little further away than I realized, and I think it was just a funky play. I couldn't even be mad at Russ about that because he's made so many incredible plays, including that flea flicker, or I guess it was a throwback. That play was crazy because the defensive backs for Philadelphia were not actually that fooled. It was it allowed us to get a step. Was it Malik Turner who made that catch?
It was, yeah.
It allowed Malik Turner to get a step, but he wasn't like wide open. It wasn't like the defensive guys for the Eagles bit so hard that then it was just kind of like a formality to throw the ball. Russell Wilson, I saw this stat that pass had a 13% chance of actually being completed, which made it the fifth most improbable pass play in the NFL that's been completed this year, which I was kind of surprised to read. But anyway, I mean, I think that because of the trickeration with that play, it'd be easy to overlook the fact that Russell threw a perfect football because he's got a lead turner. He's got to put it in the back of the end zone. He's got to put it over the defenders. Like, there was not a lot of daylight there. It was almost like Turner just running a regular route could have gotten that open, it would seem.
Yes, and then the Rashad Penny touchdown was incredible, too. Can you remind me, Luke, did you say that you were – you said you listened to part of this game. Did you see any of it? I'm sorry. I think you already explained
it. Yeah, I watched most of it. So I watched the first half at the hotel in L.A., and then I had to check out, and I also had a flight. And so I left during halftime and went down to this place called The Shack to watch the second half. And so there was about, I don't know, 5 minutes where I was listening in the car. So I watched most of the game, the vast majority of the game. And that Rashad Penny run was wonderful. And it was interesting because there was just something. Penny just had some pop or some spring in his step yesterday. You could just tell from the very beginning. And Philadelphia's run defense was pretty good, actually. I think that was kind of their thing when they were like, we're going to stack the box and we're going to make you beat us through the air. And there was just something about Penny was just consistently getting, you know, 5-6 yards a run. He just looked – he looked better than Chris Carson did. Some people are saying that's because Carson's just been carrying the load all season. His body's maybe kind of breaking down.
Oh.
I mean, boy, we got to talk about this Carson fumble thing.
Two
but quickly
in a row.
On the Penny tip, before Penny made that touchdown run, I was about to text our group and go, boy, Penny's really got something today. And I have to say that's a very encouraging development.
Mm-hmm.
If Penny can stay healthy, because I feel like the thing that happens with Penny is anytime he runs it for he'll like I feel like there's been like 4 or 5 games in his career where he has a great run and he literally hurts himself at the end of the great run. Like he pops something, he tweaks something, and then he's kind of, you know, day to day after that. So if he can stay healthy, I think that's going to be really good for us. Not the least of the reasons being because Chris Carson's got some fumbling issues. I think he's leading the league in fumbles.
At running back. Yeah, you're right. One thing I wanted to say about the Penny run that kind of surprised me, maybe it shouldn't, and again, take this all with a grain of salt of somebody who just take it with a grain of salt, but I always think of even Carson when he can hang on to it and Penny as being tough running backs, right? Like smash mm-hmm. through and you yeah. can break off, you know, at least 4 and hopefully 8 or 9 and get the first down, right? And I always think of him as just like finding a way to break through. What surprised me on that run is I can't remember the last time I saw one of those guys out in space where he's just running. And he was fast. He outran a bunch of guys, which I guess in the moment I was surprised by, and maybe again, I shouldn't be. I mean, I have no idea how fast the guy can run. I just hadn't seen that and it was exciting.
Did you read what he said about why he thought he was able to do that?
No.
He said Rashad Penny couldn't believe how fast he felt when he was running.
Oh, okay.
And
so he surprised himself.
He stopped eating McDonald's.
Oh, I did see somebody texted something about he credits his success with cutting out McDonald's. Oh, my God.
Yes, literally. Like he I think he was talking to like Larry Stone or something from the Seattle Times that he basically has lost some weight because he's been eating better, just trying to stay ready to go, and that he really felt the effect of that when he was out there, you know, on that run in space. He said he was kind of surprised. But again, I've got this kind of sort of PTSD around this stuff now that when a Seahawk gets out in the clear and there's somebody running behind them, I think that the ball's going to get knocked loose. So the fact that there was a guy who kind of came out of nowhere who Penny sort of stiff-armed and then kept going. He got the touchdown, obviously. But when that guy emerged, I was like, well, here you go. This is the punch out.
Yeah.
Like I feel like just like that's become such a thing in the NFL now. It's almost like the upside of getting in the clear and running is that you're in the clear and running. The downside is there's about a 50% chance you're going to get the ball punched out. Especially, let's just say, if you're a Seahawk defensive lineman and you're trying to run it and lateral it.
Right.
And like, God bless. Thank God he was down. And who was that again? Was that Woods?
That sounds right to me. I wouldn't have been able to conjure that. I think Woods.
But whoever it was, the Seahawk who recovered one of those fumbles and then started running and then is trying to lateral it to Shaquem Griffin, which, you know, I don't want to – how do I talk about this in a way that is appropriate? I mean – It bears noting that Shaquem Griffin has one hand.
Yeah.
You know, like that's I don't know how he picked the ball up. Like it's an incredible physical feat for anyone, even if they have both hands, use of both hands, to pick up a loose football in the NFL. It is, as they often say, what is it, an oblong spheroid or something? There's like a weird description of what the actual shape of a football is. Footballs are very oddly behaving objects on that football field. Like nobody can pick him up and run. And you've got Griffin who only has one full hand and he's the guy picking the ball up and running with it. The play ended up being moot because whoever it was, the other guy had gone down with the ball. But I was like, what is with, and it sort of happened with Efetti the last week, although I'm going to defend Efetti again. And I'm going to say he was just in total like reflex mode. Like Russell Wilson was getting tackled. The ball squirted out of Russell Wilson's hands into Efetti's hands. Efetti just did the natural thing that a human does, tries to run with the ball. But I said this last week or I said this a couple weeks ago. When you see someone who is not a professional ball handler run with a football on an NFL field, it is jaw-dropping because you realize how hard that job is when you see someone who doesn't know what they're doing try to do it.
Mm-hmm. And didn't Shaquem recover 2 fumbles? I may be misremembering that, but I'm pretty sure
I think he
recovered.
I think he caused I know he caused one or two, and then he did. Yeah, he picked up. He picked that one up that ended up being down by contact because the guy already had a knee down. Thank God. I guess it's just kind of funny. It's like, what goes into your brain as a D lineman? Like, I'm asking. Again, I'm the guy who the one time I was on a pro field, and I literally just talked about this on the last No Point. I'm the guy who the one time I got to be on a baseball diamond stepped off the rubber and checked the runner. So, of course, if I'm a D lineman and I get the ball, I'm going to run with it. I'm going to try to score a touchdown. The lateraling part is the part that I – I'm always kind of like I scratch my head at, because it's like the success rate of lateraling to another defensive player and having it not be a penalty and having it not get fumbled is so low. I feel like that's something you got to teach those guys. Like, if you recover the ball, great. If you want to try to rumble, great. Cover it with both hands. But when it's time to fall down, big tree fall hard. Just go down. No trickeration, please.
Yeah, of course. Now I'm conflating too. I think there was one where a guy tried to lateral, but I thought there was another one where he just fell and he grabbed it and tried to run, and then it squirted out of his hands. And then Shaquem grabbed it. Maybe I'm never mind. Sorry. I think we might be conflating two things. Is there a chance there?
Very possible. And I also didn't watch the entire game, so. I might have missed that play or whatever. I mean, it was – again, the takeaway for me from this – you asked the question, is this credit to the Philly defense? I would say less so than the Seahawks offense kind of doing a thing it does sometimes, which is like toying with its opponent. Now, thankfully, we're 6-0 on the road, so that's a pretty amazing record, and we got to appreciate that. I think the Seahawks tend to play up or down to the level that they need to most games. It's why they're able to beat the Niners on the road in an epic game, but why they're kind of not really putting the pedal to the metal with Philadelphia. And also, Russell Wilson was sacked like four times in the first half, which is not good. Now, granted, they have Fletcher Cox. They've got a pretty decent defensive line, the Eagles do, so... I would like us to be better at protecting Russell Wilson, obviously. Four sacks in the first half, that's a bad number. So I'm just happy that we flew all the way across country, had our game flexed.
Yeah, that really pissed me. That really ruined my day, by the way, because I had my whole day set up. I was on the sign-up sheet for my volunteer gig on Sunday. It was going to be a perfect day. Wake up, watch the Browns in the morning, go do my Sunday stuff, and then come back and watch the Seahawks at night. And then they flexed that schedule right after the Seahawks beat the 49ers. Like, it felt like an insult, but I mean... Actually, in hindsight, though, looking back at the two games that were played yesterday, I guess having the 49ers absolutely rout Green Bay probably did play better on national television than this, like, rainy, just drawn-out, slow game that the Seahawks played.
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess San Francisco's a bigger city by population, and then Green Bay, I guess, is just an iconic team, maybe. But, yeah, that game was just... That game was just utter shite, and I said this on TBTL today. I was running hot in the text chains today or yesterday because I was just basically sitting in airports and sports bars by myself, just texting away. But even though I guess it would have been better for us if Green Bay would have won, because then that would have actually moved the Seahawks into first place. I did think the silver lining, as I texted you all was. We can't control our fate with Green Bay because we don't play Green Bay this season, right? Am I right about that? I don't think that the Seahawks play Green Bay. So by Green Bay getting that loss, it means the Seahawks are now ahead of Green Bay in the overall NFC conversation, even by just a game. And we do control our fate with the Niners. We've beat them once. We play them again. So it'd be better because if Green Bay were to beat the 49ers and go on and somehow like win out and have a really good record – they'd have the number one seed, and we'd have no ability to really impact it other than winning every single one of our games, and we'd still have the same record. And then that gets into some conference stuff that I don't really understand. So as much as I was bummed to see the Niners roll, as much as my fantasy fortunes were just – boy, we were talking on Friday, I think, about how it was like going to be a coin toss of a fantasy matchup between you and I this weekend. Boy, that coin only had one image on both sides, and it was a victory for one – Cuyahoga Clam, Mr. Andrew Walsh. It wasn't even close. Like, I was by, like, 5 p.m. completely and totally pwned yesterday. So, by the way, tip of the cap.
Congratulations. Let's not as the wolf says in my favorite movie, Pulp Fiction. No, no. I will say that if Lamar Jackson gets negative 16 points tonight, you could still win this because I still have Lamar Jackson playing. So,
Lamar, yeah, I know. That's hilarious.
If he forgets which way to run and just keeps throwing it into the wrong end zone or what have you, there is a chance you could win. So let's hold off.
Right. I mean, my only chance was, and it's funny because the computer obviously knows some stuff, because I was looking at the game and I was like, we're very close on points, and it's basically going to be Lamar Jackson going against Aaron Rodgers. Why is it saying that I have like an 11% chance? And why is that going down to 1%? It's like, because the computer knows. It knows San Francisco's defense. It knows Aaron Rodgers, every way that Aaron Rodgers is trending. And, you know, so it just – it figured it out before I did, and the answer was, I am going to lose by a million points to you. So,
and also, what happened to your – because I know that you moved things around to make sure you didn't have any empty slots in your roster for buys, but you put in this tight end, Austin Hooper, who then ended up not playing. He ended up being out with a knee. Was that late-breaking news on Sunday?
It must have been, because he was not listed as questionable when I started him. And he's actually I had a little bit of a – I had a charmed early run with my fantasy team of like Austin Hooper actually having a really good season, I think a better season than people were expecting. And a few other players over – like Cooper, Amari Cooper playing really well in Dallas. Kind of – you know, he's a good receiver, but I think – I had some guys overperforming. And now they're all – everybody's kind of regressing to the mean – and it's bad times for Aluki. Okay, so Seahawks, quickly, just to wrap this up from my end and then say anything you want, my friend, on this, and then we can talk Browns a little bit. I continue to be encouraged because I think even when we win ugly games, it just proves – like the only thing worse than winning an ugly game is losing an ugly game. And we won that game. We traveled across the country, which I don't think is insignificant. It was – weather was lousy. Everything was kind of lousy there. As we had all established, it could have been a trap game. It wasn't. We did what we had to do to win. We've still – we got a very strong record. And I just think we'll – I think we generally will play up to the competition or down to the competition. That's just kind of how it's going to be for us this season. And I'm extremely happy the Seahawks are 9-2. That's
oh, my God. You know, I can't – very excited, yeah.
And I mean, and we've got that San Francisco win under our belts. Not that it's going to be a piece of cake to beat them at CenturyLink, but that's just huge because at the very worst, we're going to split with San Francisco. So that's pretty massive. I really feel like the Seahawks. I mean, I don't think that like yesterday was great evidence of this, but I think the Seahawks. I think they can go toe to toe with any team in the NFL on a given day, you know. And maybe, you know, if we show up and we play the way we can play, and Jadeveon Clowney is healthy and getting pressure, I think the Seahawks are as good as any team in the NFL. I think we also could lose to any team, but right now I feel cautiously optimistic. How about you?
I feel nervous about the Vikings next week. I haven't been following the Vikings very closely, but I'm looking at their record here. They're 8-3. I know that they've been going head-to-head for their division against Green Bay. Green Bay has looked terrible last night and got a shaky win the week before, if I recall, like a one-possession win that was threatened near the end. I could be messing up my history on that. But anyway, but the Vikings, on paper at least from where I'm looking, seem like that could be a challenging game. And this is the weirdest thing. I never thought I'd say this. Is it weird that I'm nervous it's at home? The Seahawks have both of their losses at home this year.
I know. That's an odd thing because it's usually that's the comfort. It's like, well, we'll get a few calls and we'll get a just the energy of that crowd. I mean, you know, peace and love. I think we're going to smoke them.
Really?
I just think Kirk Cousins, yeah, I mean, and I'm not worried about the Seahawks. I'm worried about our friendship with the Stewbot. I'm worried it can't survive that. I just think that, I mean, who's Minnesota beat? I don't know Minnesota's schedule.
Yeah,
but I don't think Kirk Cousins, I mean, Kirk Cousins, I think in that dome when he's rolling can throw some passes, but I think he is overall, I think, underperforming. I know that he brought them back from down 21 a couple games ago. That was a cool game, and I was happy for Stu. Like, I actually like Minnesota. Don't get me wrong. I want Minnesota to have success and to win football games. I'm just, and this is probably a major mistake, I'm just not scared of them. I'm just not scared of Kirk Cousins. As long as he still has a few rocks left in his death rock pile, I think the Seahawks will be able to take him. I just
You're adding to my nervousness.
Adding to my nervousness yesterday?
Huh.
And I'm probably doing the same thing to you right now. Like the I've so much professional disdain for this person that I don't even want to really talk about them. But the person who does the halftime shows on the radio broadcast for the Seahawks, who was decided to at the very end of the halftime show, because again I was in the car driving down to where I was going to watch the second half, mentions that the Seahawks, when they lead by more than four at halftime under Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, are 58-0, I think was the number, or some ridiculously gaudy number. And he mentions it. And I'm in the car. And I'm like, are you really trying to lose this game for us right now? So they, you know, insert tire commercial, insert, you know, memory care, insert Dr. Arakaki. And then we come back to Steve Rabel and Dave Wyman. And Steve Rabel goes, oh, I just want to repeat something that they said right before they were going to the commercial. And then he restates the stat. And I'm like, you guys, do you understand how jinxes work? Saying they've never lost a game under these two people when they're leading by this much, which was all of 7 points, I believe, at that time. They're undefeated. I was like, that's how you get yourself defeated. So I'm probably doing that right now by saying I'm not afraid of Kirk Cousins. Mm-hmm. I'm just not. But I could be wrong. Do you have it in front of you who Minnesota has played?
Yeah. So I think this is going to, I guess, support your theory a little bit. So the last up, they beat the Broncos. So congratulations. Mm-hmm. Before that, they did get that squeaker against the Cowboys. That was the come from behind, right. I believe. And then was it not?
Wait, were they? No, they weren't down to the Cowboys.
Oh, they weren't down. It was just a squeaker. I only thought
they were down to Denver.
Okay.
They were down to the Broncos, and which is why that comeback was like, again, it sounds like I'm trying to be mean to our friends in Minnesota. And some of my best bosses live, or at least they work for a company as we do, in Minnesota. But like they came back against – our actual boss lives in New York is why I had to amend that statement. But like our – like they came back against the Broncos, which to me is like the Broncos are, no offense to the Browns fans in this audience, some of my best co-bros are Browns fans. But it's like
Browns
them coming back on the Broncos. Well, the Browns lost to the Broncos.
Oh, I see what you're
saying.
So
when I criticize the Broncos, I don't want to sound like I'm also criticizing the Browns. But it's like coming back from 21 points against the piss poor Broncos, it's not nothing. I mean, three touchdowns is a lot in an NFL game. But I just want to. Anyway, I asked you to list some things, Rene, and then I interrupted you.
Yeah,
so I'll leave you to it.
What are their good wins? So before the Broncos, it was the Cowboys. That was 2024.
That's a good win.
And then the Chiefs. They lost to the Chiefs. They lost to the Chiefs. They beat
and the Mahomes-less Chiefs.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's right. Before he came back.
So they lost to Chiefs without Mahomes.
That was the third.
Again, I know it sounds like I'm piling on. I'm just trying to build my case. So they beat the Cowboys, though? So that's a good win.
They beat the Cowboys. They beat the R-words. R-words are not good, right?
No, they're terrible. Yeah, okay. They're 2-9 or something.
Beat the Lions. So there you go.
Terrible team.
They did beat the Eagles significantly by 18
terrible
points.
Terrible
team. you have the Giants. They beat them
terrible
handily.
Team.
And the Bears. Nope, the Bears beat
terrible
them.
Team.
No, Bears beat them.
Lost to a terrible team. this is not a strong resume. I know you're not arguing it is, but it's like I just hearing that I'm even more like, I mean, the NFL is so weird. It's always weird, but it's extra weird this year. It feels like how can almost every team be bad? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and the Seahawks, side note, the Seahawks have benefited from playing a lot of sub-500 teams too. Like, we've beat a lot of lousy teams. We beat the Bengals to start the season. The Bengals, I think, are still winless. Mm-hmm. And we barely beat the Bengals at home. So it's like, the Seahawks have benefited as much as anyone from weak competition, but I don't understand the math of how so. It's like, how can 90% of the teams in the NFL have losing records? Because by definition, some other teams have to have winning records if that's what's going on. It just feels like there's just so many bad teams in the league this year.
I agree with you. There does not seem to be that usual parity that everybody always talks about, because you have a few teams that are just flow, especially in the NFC, just like really head and shoulders above the rest. And I'm sorry, I'm calling up all of things. You got the 49ers 10-1, Seahawks 9-2. Packers and Vikings are both 8-3, so those are good winning records. Saints are 9-2, but like, and that's the NFC. And then everybody else is like 5-6, 2-9. There's a couple of 6-4 or something. But like, you're right. It's just like there's not parity.
Like so Dallas would be the only 500 team that the Vikings have beaten this year, I think, and Dallas is like 6-5 or something.
Six and five, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, look, the Seahawks are capable of losing to any team on any given day. They lost to a Drew Brees-less New Orleans team in a stunning fashion. So I'm sure let me put it this way: if the Seahawks lose on Sunday, it is my fault. I did make it happen with my cockiness.
Yes,
but I just don't. I don't think it's a gimme, but I'm not super afraid of Minnesota. Well, and why do I have to say that? There's no upside to that. All I do is leave myself open to being the jinxer.
Well, let me use this jinx conversation to pivot to the Browns quickly, because I don't suppose you followed that since it was on at the same time as the Seahawks, and I don't have to do a play-by-play breakdown, but you can sign up for my own personal Browns play-by-play breakdown podcast. Where I just rewatch the game and drink beers and just kind of swear out loud. But
is it called a blessing to the community?
Yes, that is what I would call it. But the Browns got off, as you said, to a really hot lead yesterday. Not just their usual kind of, we're going to go out there and have one good drive and then everything's going to fall apart. They had one amazing half where you saw everything clicking the way things were supposed to click. You saw Landry get two touchdowns. I'm sure some of this is wrong. Nobody look it up. But I'm pretty sure Landry got two touchdowns in the first half. OBJ got one in the first half. And I want to even say Chubb definitely got a touchdown. I don't remember if that was in the first half or not. But, like, you just saw a balanced offense. And, of course, you have Kareem Hunt in there, too, who had an amazing day. You just saw this balanced offense where all of the – I hate it when people refer to people as weapons. But all of the big play players on the Browns were doing what they were supposed to do. And Baker looked good. But, you know, Genevieve goes, our friends were watching the Seahawks game at the Eagles Club, not to be confused with the Eagles, the football team. But I was at home watching the Browns. So she watched the first half of the Browns with me, saw the Browns get up 28-0. I think at half it was 28-3. And then she said, okay, they have this in hand. I'm going to go to the Eagles now, I'm sure. And I was just like, don't say that. She's like, I don't believe in jinxes. Like, I will leave you if you believe in magical stuff. I'm like, I am wearing two Browns shirts right now, and that is why we're winning. I only usually wear one Browns shirt, and we're winning because I'm wearing two brown shirts. So just get out.
That's science.
I said, get out of my house if you're dark-sided. And then she left to go watch the Seahawks game with our friends while I was stuck in my media blackout cave, where I was time shifting the Seahawks. And the second half was the stuff of – well, it began – the third quarter was the stuff of nightmares. You suddenly saw you suddenly saw Miami score two touchdowns in a row unanswered for. So when you throw in the field goal at the end of the first half and a missed Browns field goal, it just looked like everything was going to turn. They took a 28-point lead, and they had chiseled – Miami had chiseled it down to, I believe, 14 points. I believe at some point they did. I think that's the smallest the margin got was a 14-point game, which sounds significant. But when you've seen the Browns it up, right, or the Browns coug it up, or whatever you want to say, so many times, and you just see this complete shift in momentum. And you got that weird looking Fitzpatrick, like Lord of the Rings.
Fitzmagic.
Lord of the Rings-ing the ball into the end zone and then celebrating like Gimli the Battle Troll. And you're just like, oh my God, this is over. I was like cursing Genevieve for cursing the Browns. But then the Browns were able to hold them to the two touchdowns and then started scoring again. And the final score was, I believe, 41-24. Yeah. 41 to 24.
Yep.
So those are some pretty gaudy numbers, and the Browns definitely pulled. But when you've been watching the Browns as long as I have, that third quarter almost killed me, which I know when you're looking at a final score of 41 to 24, you could be like, okay, Andrew, you're just being dramatic at this point. But it was a good win. I mean, not everything was perfect, and I think Baker Mayfield will be the first one to tell you that. There were some clock management decisions going on where we should have just been grinding the clock out, but Freddie Kitchens in the red zone decides to call two unsuccessful pass plays. In his defense, he didn't say run the unsuccessful pass play, but like you're trying to run the clock down. You have two just like all pro running backs who are having just hella games. You're in the red zone. You know you have red zone issues, and you want to keep the clock running. Yeah, take two shots in the end zone, you dingus. So there was definitely some like anger from me.
Blue 42 Omaha.
So anyway,
pass play that never works out.
Yeah. So anyway, but at the end of the day, to use that phrase, I couldn't have been happier with my two teams winning. The what would have made it sweeter would have been a Steelers loss and a Niners loss. I love your justification for why there's an upside to the Green Bay loss yesterday as opposed to the 49ers, so I will definitely cling to that. A Steelers loss would have been really big for us because just 2 weeks after we had that our first Steelers win in 5 years, which of course ended in the 8 seconds that changed the Browns forever.
I will always believe you, and I don't think you're ever being extra or dramatic. You're talking about the third quarter of yesterday's game and being kind of like biting your nails. I will always believe that the Browns will find a way to really mess things up based on that 8 seconds.
Yeah,
so in that way, it was useful because if you turn to me, the Browns could be up by 100 points, and if you turned to me and said, "Watch them lose this," I would be like, "The man has seen stuff.
Yeah,
like, it's possible."
Things you couldn't understand. Things you shouldn't understand. But anyway, I'm sorry I'm rambling. I just want to complete my thought by saying that it's amazing that 2 weeks after that debacle, I mean, our great win over the Steelers last week, but that ended with the Myles Garrett bonking of the head and whatnot, we're going to Pittsburgh already next week. While wounds are still very fresh, I think, and the Steelers are going to have it in for us. I am not super optimistic about next week's game against the Steelers in Pittsburgh, but I'm more optimistic than I would have been had we not really trampled the Dolphins. I think that the Browns really needed a big win after this crazy week.
I think you guys are going to destroy the Steelers.
Really?
They benched Rudolph. They barely beat Cincinnati. Now, granted, the Seahawks also barely beat Cincinnati.
Right.
But, like, I don't think things are great over an old steel town. And so I think you guys are hitting your stride. I think you guys are going to be fine. That's my opinion. But it's a Burbank stone cold lock.
I don't believe it for more like metaphysical reasons, which I know is not a good argument, but like I don't know what to tell you. Like I just think there's going to be so much drama going into this, and there's just so much history between these two teams, and now this new history, and somebody, it may be happening right now. Who knows? Like somebody might be talking to Baker Mayfield on a podium somewhere right now, and he's creating a firestorm that's going to be a distraction, or who knows? I mean, I'm really hoping for a win next week, but I will tell you, as a big Browns fan, I will not be sitting in front of the TV next weekend thinking, oh, we got this, because I will be looking. I mean, they can be up by 100 points, like you say, and I won't believe it until I see the final score.
Crucially, are the games next week on the same – Mm-mm. Wait, are we playing? Is next week Monday night?
It is. Vikings Monday Night Football.
Oh,
that's
going
to be – that's. I'm telling. I know that I said this about the 49ers, but I think that another Monday night game with a lot on the line between these two NFC teams, I think that Seahawks-Vikings game is going to be something to watch on Monday.
I think so, too. They're going to flex it to 10 a.m., which will be weird on a Monday, but they got to do it.
Yeah, I'll be really... Do they ever flex anybody out of Monday night football? I think they do, right?
No,
just
I don't think
Sunday
you can,
night?
I mean, that's too... I think because you're already going to play the football game there on that day.
Yeah.
I think to flex it to a different date would be like
good
the logistics of that would be craziness. I do still think that the flexing is crazy anyway, because like you said, you were mentioning it as far as how you had your day kind of sketched out in your mind. Now imagine you lived in you know, suburban New Jersey or suburban Pennsylvania, and you're all psyched to go to this Eagles game, and like you got your whole day planned around it and when you're going to leave and park and yada yada yada. Maybe there's a family event in the morning, and then the NFL's just like, psych.
Yeah,
it's actually happening at 10 a.m. or I guess 1 p.m. Yeah. out there. But still, it's just like, I don't know. I not just because it affected our team, but I find that to be kind of annoying. I mean, here's the thing. If you're going to do it, really go for it, because what's not been flexed out, like what's tonight's game? Who's playing Monday Night Football tonight? Well, we know the Ravens.
Oh, it's the Ravens. Lamar Jackson. Yeah, who are the Ravens playing? I'll have to look it up.
Oh, L.A., that's going to be a good game. So that actually undermines my point. But they're just saying, like, Thursday Night Football feels like a lot of the time just the dregs. You're just like, Jacksonville takes on Carolina. Jacksonville takes on Tennessee. And they're like, in Mexico City. What are we watching right now? Why are these teams not been disbanded? What are we, like, you know, it'll be like the Carson, California Chargers take on the Music City, Tennessee Titans in Smolensk, Russia. What?
Hey, let me ask you a quick question, not to bury your point.
Colt McCoy and the Titans take on Eddie Bridgewater, Teddy Bridgewater's cousin. In Oslo.
Let me ask you a quick question. Why do you think the Chargers is going to be a good game? I'm looking at the Chargers. They have a pretty losing record right now, but I don't know much about them.
I said Chargers. It's the Rams. I'm sorry. I think I missed.
Oh, no, you didn't. You said L.A. You said L.A., and I just went to Chargers.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Okay. But I think the Rams – I mean, look, I think the Rams – it's weird. You know what happens? I think they're just pathways in my brain. And they get – it's like you with the Browns for the – you know, for the foreseeable future. And so there's a lot of new memories being made. You're always going to kind of – because I think of your experience, think of how can the Browns mess this up. And because the Rams have been so good under Sean McVay, even though their record is not great this year, they're 6-4, I still think of them as a team that could beat Baltimore. Because they've been good historically. Like, it takes me a long time to catch up to the new information about a team. So, yeah, on paper, this should be a pretty easy win for Baltimore. But I still think it could be a good game.
Can I ask you this? With this,
yes.
With the Seahawks record, what it is, and frankly the Niners, what it is, and with the Rams just being 6-4 going up against the Ravens, obviously you'd never root for the Rams. They're in the Seahawks division. But I, as a Browns fan, I got to root against the Ravens. I mean, I'd always root against the Ravens, even if it didn't mean anything for the Browns. But it's really significant for the Browns. Can I just wholeheartedly root for the Rams in good faith, knowing that that's not really going to have any negative impact on my Seahawks? Because I just want to feel good about it.
Follow your heart. And also, yes, I mean, there is the argument that, like, if the Rams go to 7-4 and then the Seahawks were to start dropping a bunch of games, that could be an issue. But, I mean, honestly, if the Seahawks – the Rams are – many people think the Rams are actually look on the outside looking in for the playoffs. So if the Seahawks end up competing with the Rams for the, like, last spot, then something's gone pretty drastically wrong for us at this point. So I think – I officially give you what's the you grew up Catholic. Mm-hmm. I give you permission to root wholeheartedly for the Rams to beat Baltimore.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if we had Durs on the phone, if he would say something different. But
yes, of course.
Yeah, but because here's where I am emotionally with these two teams, since you didn't ask, and nobody asked. But it's interesting that my love of the Browns, obviously the Browns faced the Seahawks. I root for the Browns, right? Like the Browns do come first in almost every scenario. But we're definitely at that part of the season right now where, yeah, people are talking about the Browns, you know, being in the hunt for this playoff berth and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, the Browns are not getting into the playoffs. And even on the off chance that they do, they're going to be eliminated quickly. I've seen their style of play. And I know that the Seahawks have had their boneheaded quarters as well. But, like, the Browns are not a complete team right now. They are not able to finish games in most cases unless they're playing Miami. You know, like, no offense, Miami fans, but you know what your record is. Like, the Browns cannot finish games. So if I have a chance of rooting for a team that's going to really be a playoff contender and maybe a Super Bowl contender, it is clearly the Seahawks. It's almost like when you're balancing your loyalties to your fantasy versus IRL football teams. Like, I am all in on the Seahawks. I don't want anything to ruin the Seahawks' chances of just, like, dominating the playoffs, if that's a possibility. But I also just really hate the Ravens. So, you know, anyway, that's why I'm kind of that's where my loyalties lie right now.
Well, you know, I kind of had a similar experience yesterday when I was at that place in Playa del Rey, because I was just instinctively rooting, even though I'm no Cowboys head, I was rooting for the Cowboys to beat the Patriots because I just dislike the Patriots so much. And then when it was clear they were going to lose, I was like, gosh darn it. And this guy was, again, full Seahawk garb. L.A. is an interesting town. There's a lot of Seattleites down there. Mm-hmm. Like, it's pretty Seahawk heavy. But he was like, no, you know, that's better for us. I was like, well, how do you mean? And he was like, well, because Dallas is in the NFC. So to the degree that Dallas had any chance of coming back and catching us, we really should be rooting against Dallas. Mm-hmm. We should be rooting for the Patriots. But I just dislike the Patriots so much that I'm – in that game, I just don't care, you know. And I think those petty rivalries, like you just hating the Baltimore Ravens with every fiber of your being, I think that's just what you got to do. That's the dilithium crystal that drives sports fandom. It can't be like you just make the conscious decision that now all of a sudden you're like rooting for them because you want the Rams to lose. Because I think that's just too much to ask of your –
yeah,
your nervous system. I think you should be totally allowed to hate them.
And the Ravens make sense for me, though. I mean, I do root for the Browns, and I dislike the Ravens for all of that, and they're in the same division. So what doesn't make sense is my hatred of Aaron Rodgers. And I don't know when exactly that seed was planted. I have some ideas about it. We've tried to analyze it on the show before. It doesn't get us anywhere. But, like, it just grows stronger with every day. I find him to be so smug, and I love seeing him getting knocked on his ass, and I love seeing him roll his eyes when a team member doesn't catch a ball, and he's just so judgy. Like, I love seeing that guy lose. So again, I would have loved to wake up this morning and have the Seahawks atop the division, but once it was clear that wasn't going to happen, I loved watching that routing last night.
Yeah, you've always disliked him, and I have to say that, like, there was something that kind of – I wouldn't say it completely supported your theory, but it was a pretty ballsy response. Did you see that clip of him right after San Francisco passed over him in the draft?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, when he said, they're going to regret not drafting me.
Well, they said, do you regret not being drafted by San Francisco? And he grew up in the – you know, he played – for Cal, and he grew up in California, and he said, "No, they're going to regret not drafting."
Yeah, not as much as they're going to regret. Yeah,
yeah, which is pretty, like, you know, you're a 23-year-old kid, you haven't thrown an NFL pass. That's pretty ballsy.
Yeah,
and I, because I don't hate Aaron Rodgers, I take it to be like, well, hey, he knew his value and he actually delivered on it.
He did.
You know?
Yeah, you got to give him credit.
That's the side that I read it from. But I'll tell you what, if it was Tom Brady who said that, coming out of Michigan, I'd be like, F that MAGA head. So there's no, like, logic to it for me. It's just all emotional. And I don't particularly dislike Aaron Rodgers. But I will tell you, I was looking for the clip and I can't find it for whatever reason. But you, like, if for somebody who doesn't like Aaron Rodgers, and then this week you were going up against a person who has Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback, which I didn't choose. That was the robot. But whatever. I have had Aaron Rodgers. For him to just get completely demolished like that, and for it to benefit your fantasy team, to quote Conan the Barbarian, somebody from that movie, what is best in life? To see your enemy destroyed and hear the lamentation of the women. Like, that was just what is best in life. That was just a complete destruction of Aaron Rodgers and all who associate with him, a.k.a. me. So good, congratulations.
Yeah, no, that was definitely that was fun. I mean, I wasn't hanging on every play of that game, but and also you had texted something. Did he also like kind of throw? Because I love the way he kind of. I feel like. I don't know if I have data to back this up. I just feel like there's a vibe with him where he, you know, like Russell Wilson throws a pass that should be caught, right? And DK misses it. You will see Russell Wilson the next time they're together, maybe even in that moment, like pat him on the shoulder and be like, that's all right. We got him next time. You know, like no blame, no finger pointing. You never see that with Russell Wilson, whose personality I appreciate more and more every day. I think it suits him well. For his skill set. And Aaron Rodgers, I just feel like he's always rolling his eyes. Like, oh, maybe if I had a tight end I could work with. I don't know. I'm just pulling that position out of the air. But I sort of feel like he's got this kind of dismissive quality where it's never his fault.
That's very hard for me to assess. I haven't noticed that particularly. And my defense of Aaron Rodgers would be if he did that a lot, I think his receivers would not go through walls for him, whether it's Devontae Adams or whomever else. And like I kind of think the only way that he can have as much success as he has is, one, some natural talent, and two, the guys he's throwing to and the guys who are protecting him in the pocket and the guys who are running behind him, be it Jones, they don't hate him.
Yeah.
So that would be my guess. But also, I don't know his personality. He could be a catty little bitch who lives for the drama. Like, I don't know his deal. And so maybe he is kind of like, I'm sure there's a range from quarterbacks, you know, of like sort of how kind of magnanimous are they about mess ups. And I'm trying to think of who probably the least forgiving. You really rarely see this is why I think it's a self-regulating system. You very rarely see a quarterback openly like yelling at a receiver on the field. Every once in a while, it'll get the better of them. But I think that there's a decorum issue. And I think that what they know is that if they go too hard on someone, that person is not going to perform as well down the line. And so it's in their best interest to try to not be a kind of a jerk.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't mean to say that I've seen him berate one of his teammates or anything. I just feel like, and again, it could just be his face and it's just playing into my thing. I just feel like his reaction, especially when you compare it to, and I'm just basing this again on just kind of like me trying to read emotions from afar. He's going to be this kind of, maybe he's rolling his eyes at himself. I don't know. But he's got this reaction to a play that maybe was close but not there. This kind of eye roll, just like, which I now enjoy because it means that he's losing. But I think it's one of the things that turned me off, as opposed to Russell just like clap, clap, clap. All right, let's still in this. Yeah, we're only down by 42 points, and there's 2 minutes left. Yeah. We got this.
I'm trying to think of who. Now I just want to think of who I think the kind of like. I mean, look, this is my bias 100% showing through. He's probably a great guy. He's probably an awesome teammate. And that whole theory I have about the success of the team indicating if the quarterback is a good guy. Brady seems to me like he'd be a bit passive aggressive. Like maybe he wouldn't say anything, but he'd go home and he'd tell Giselle about whatever. I'll tell you who I just deeply dislike is Julian Edelman, your fellow Golden Flash. I mean, credit to him. He's a very effective player. He's a converted quarterback, obviously, from college. And, you know, he deserves accolades. But he has this – it's the Aaron Rodgers thing, but just applied to a different player, like the way you feel about Aaron Rodgers. Julian Edelman is never not shit-talking when he gets up from catching a pass.
Oh, really?
He's never not talking to the DB. He has this smug-ass thing he does when he catches a ball. Like, this is the thing about being Julian Edelman. You work – first of all, Julian Edelman's very talented. He's a hard worker. He also operates within arguably the best pro football system that's ever been created in the history of the sport. And so what it means is he's open a lot of the time. He's not like Tyler Lockett, who just is toe-tapping in the – and I'm sure someone can email me – a number of spectacular Julian Edelman catches. But Julian Edelman is a possession receiver who is mostly open in space, in my experience of watching the games. He will catch a ball where it's like, because of great play design, and he executes it correctly, and to his credit, he'll be out there. Brady will throw it 15 yards. He will catch it. And then he just has this way of standing up, signaling the first down, and dropping the ball that just so rubs me the wrong way. Because it's not – he does not necessarily do it on a play where he went over the middle – went up for a circus catch, got completely obliterated, and still came down with the ball. If you survive that and you want to show off when you signal the first down, that's great. If you're Edelman, though, and you just went and you sat down 15 yards down the field while a Tom Brady laser beam found you in the crouch, it's like, Let's relax, Julian Edelman.
You hate them so much. You've also watched way more games of them. Like, I don't like the Patriots. In fact, like, your hatred of the Patriots really tempers mine a little bit. And I've always hated them, and I think they're cheaters. And, you know, all the
we
things.
We didn't even talk. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Keep going.
No, I was just going to say, I just don't. Like, if somehow your hatred of them, and I love how it's becoming more and more irrational. Not with the Edelman thing, because you're talking about body language, and I was just going off on body language, too. But just, like, Tom Brady seems like the guy who's going home to his wife and shit talking players. Like, I love that you think that. I don't know where you get that at all. And like, I think that I,
because Tom Brady has no morals. Tom Brady is a guy who had a MAGA hat in his locker. Like, think, like, look at the hat, Google MAGA, and then tell him. And then when he was asked about it, I'm not getting hot at you, by the way, but this is my theory about Tom Brady, is Tom Brady is doing an impression of a human being. He's doing a really pretty convincing job, and he's doing a great job of being a pro football player, but he's like, he just is the kind of guy who, like, would have a MAGA hat in his locker, and they would go, what's the deal with that? And he'd go, oh, I've played golf with him a couple times, or, you know, he's a good guy. Like, he's not even like a Curt Schilling or somebody who's like actually like a die. He's not even like a Bosa. He's not even someone who's willing to own that they're a terrible human. He'll just be like, yeah, you know, it's just a hat, and like, I don't know, he's fine. It's like, no, pick a side. You know, and that to me speaks to Tom Brady's just deeply uninteresting character and nature. And so that's why I think I attribute just bad teammateness, and also the fact that he sent a ball boy to deflate footballs.
Yeah, right.
Which, again, in the history of football, and that what I really want to talk about was Astros cheating, dude.
Oh, yeah. God, that we sat on that. That was like a month ago, right, when that all came out?
Well, it's so funny because I saw that headline and I just didn't put it together, and then the story got more attention. I started hearing about it on like NPR and stuff, and I was like, whoa, that's wild. Like, I think you got to strip their World Series ring. Sorry, Eddie in Houston and our other listeners. I mean, You heard about the whole trash can thing, right?
No, what's the trash can? I mean, I only knew the very basics. I know that they were sign stealing using technology, right? Using cameras, and they got caught doing that. And that was in the playoffs, I think the accusation was, right?
I don't know when the specific games were where they recorded the trash can thing, but here's what they were doing. They would set up cameras that were filming the catcher, and then those cameras were just linked to a TV that was in the tunnel. So, first of all, this is way different than the guy standing at second if you get a base runner and he's kind of trying to guess the signs. This is a system where you're filming the catcher, and not just filming them, but in real time, that is being transmitted to someone who is standing in the tunnel, and they have an upside down plastic Rubbermaid garbage can. And when they see the signal for fastball, they bang the garbage can as loud as they can in real time so that the batter who is standing at the plate knows a fastball is coming.
Oh, is that so? So they had the TV wasn't in the thing. The trash can was like a drum they used for the signal.
They would make an audio indication to the guy hitting that it's about to be a fastball, which is like the hard part about being there's a lot of hard parts about it, but one of the toughest things about hitting a major league pitcher is you don't know what they're going to throw. And the guessing game about what's coming next is the whole art and science of that endeavor. And if you have somebody banging a trash can so that Valbuena, who played there for a minute, but like, you know, insert more famous Astro. And by the way, I love Altuve, which is weird because I don't know Altuve's politics. I just love that Altuve is 5'3" and is so good at baseball. I just I'm a fan. But I will tell you this. The Houston hitters were incredible at overperforming. I think there was a company called – it's either McKinley or McKinsey. I'm forgetting. But they are like one of these data firms. And I believe they've also worked with Republicans. And I believe they were retained by the Houston Astros to just try to take a very sort of data-driven, almost not even sports, just like, let's understand the data of this, approach to winning baseball games. And Houston famously did that thing where they basically burned the whole team down and brought it back, you know, from nothing and rebuilt it with these amazing players. And those players are undoubtedly amazing. But Also, the fact that they were overperforming in terms of their hitting, and they had someone at some point, I don't know how pervasive it was, banging a garbage can to tell them what pitch was coming next. I just find that to be so dreadful as far as a cheating scandal goes. I just don't think that you can – I don't think that they should be able to still be considered World Series champions, honestly.
Now, was this – were these accusations stemming from this was from 2017, right? That's when they won their title?
I think so. Now, it's confusing because the story just sort of came out, but I think it refers back to older seasons. And I think what happened was – I heard this on NPR – I think what happened was that a number of coaches and players who had sort of left the Houston organization and gone other places were then interviewed. Mm-hmm. There was sort of a fact-finding process. And those people were the ones who kind of tipped off whoever the investigators were as to what had been happening. And I don't know what the result will be. And I don't even know – I don't want to say definitively that it was the season they won the World Series. But – it was definitely – I mean, everyone's always kind of known that they were prone to cheating as a team just because of being so sort of analytics-driven. But that to me is – it's one thing to like study a pitcher and to come up with some weird data model that says he's 5% more likely to throw this pitch there. Or again, even for the runner at second, if he can see the sign that the catcher is flashing and if he can do something to let his player know, that's just kind of baseball.
Yeah, I agree.
That's just what happens. But – to train a camera on the fingers of the catcher and then send that signal to somebody who's standing with a device in order to make noise. I mean, that's just – like that's so much worse than anything I've ever heard of.
Yeah. I mean, other than throwing games, I guess, and point shaving and stuff like that.
I guess the Black Sox scandal would be worse.
Yeah.
But those people got in a lot of trouble over that.
Yeah.
But So
it's a bummer, too, because you know what? Like the Astros – and again, I'm – especially when it comes to baseball, which has such a long history, and people's personal histories with baseball are really important. And, you know, I kind of started watching this again about a decade ago. I don't have that history, but generally speaking, like, certain teams give me a good vibe and certain teams don't. And sometimes it's, like, obvious. Like, I really hated the Angels, especially when they were just, like, so dominant. And they had a cooler year last year, so my hatred wasn't quite as red hot. But I just, like, I think I will always probably feel this kind of intense rivalry between them and the Mariners, who I will not call the Seahawks again. But the Astros, even though they got good and are at the top of our division and a real problem for the Mariners, I didn't have bad feelings about the team. They seemed like a team that took their lumps and then broke it down and rebuilt it and were patient. And like you say, Altuve's likable. They have some other likable people. I can't remember rosters off the top of my head. But like they just don't seem like – they didn't seem like a hateable team, you know? Like if this were the Angels, I'd feel very differently.
Well, I think that the thing is, though, I mean, I agree with you, even though they crushed us and their greatest growth has been at a time that the Mariners have been especially lousy, it would seem, that kind of hurts my heart. But I didn't dislike them. But there was also the whole thing about they picked up Osuna, who's had domestic violence background, and nobody wanted to pick up Osuna. It was one of those classic things where this guy's a good baseball player, but he seems to be a terrible person. And the team that was willing to make that deal, the Astros, and then you have that management person within the Astros, some kind of a – not a GM, obviously, but just somebody high up in the organization.
I thought he was a deputy GM or an assistant GM. No.
Maybe so. Yelling at that reporter something to the effect of, like, you know, basically after they had won, I think after they had qualified for the World Series, saying something about wishing that they could have, you know, picked him up sooner or picked up somebody else like him or blah, blah, blah. Like, this guy said something really shitty to this female reporter who reported it, and the Astros basically tried to ruin her career. And only after other reporters who heard it were like, no, 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 that's what he said, did they give a very, very, very not even apology to her, just a clarification. The guy did get fired, but it's just like
– they did.
So that was kind of like –
Luke, I think they did end up giving a good, simple apology to her that she ended up tweeting out. I'm pretty sure I saw. I mean,
well,
it took
good.
A long time.
Yeah.
But
I'm glad they got
finally
there,
just
my...
owned it, I think, by the very end. But they were
well, that,
their hand
that's
was
good.
Forced. Yeah.
But that, yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, Trump eventually decided to release the aid to Ukraine, but I don't think it was because. So yeah, I'm glad they apologized, but the fact that their reflexive thing was to just be like she made it up, essentially, mm-hmm. is just So that was all my point just being, it's kind of funny because I felt like you about the Astros, and then you have that moment and you're like, ugh, gross. And then it's like on the heels of that, like, oh, and they're also like taking sign stealing to another level. Here's what I can say about that, and I don't think I need to convince you or maybe even any of the listeners outside of Houston on this, but I can honestly say if the Mariners did that, I would think it was cheating.
Yeah, like, I would too. I'd be very.
You know what I mean?
It's like, a little bit like I was saying the Browns last week. Now, I mean, I think I've hardened a little bit because I think there's more stuff going on with the Pittsburgh player Rudolph, Mason Rudolph, that I think were some mitigating factors. But that's what I was feeling as a Browns fan last week when they got this big, huge win that I should have been absolutely celebrating. But I felt like a piece of shit who didn't want to. Mm-hmm. I don't think you were. I think I was talking to Phyllis about this when you were out, but like I went to the gym the next morning because I'm just kind of like that kind of a guy now, Gym Rat Andy. Yeah. And I was wearing my Brown shirt from the night before. That would usually be what I'd wear to the gym, but I had to consciously like take off my Brown shirt because I wasn't going to be the guy at the gym with the Brown shirt. And when I went to the gym, literally every conversation I overheard was about what happened with the Browns and the Steelers. And I heard people explaining it to other people. There were two conversations going on about it in the locker room. Every TV that wasn't playing impeachment stuff was playing Helmetgate. Like, it felt really shitty as a fan of this team. Not just that I didn't want to get outed, but I don't want to be that team. You know, like the Browns used to be lovable losers. I don't want to be asshole winners.
Yeah. Well, I think that the benefit of hindsight, or at least the thing that's been good, is I think that I think Myles Garrett has been doing the right thing. I mean, I think his apology seemed pretty genuine right after it happened. So I think that this thing has not trended in the wrong direction as far as, you know, as far as the Browns team.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I mean things calmed down. I started to see almost, I think that, I don't know that most of our listeners would agree with this, and I got to admit a certain amount of bias here because I'm completely biased when it comes to the Browns, but I do feel that there's a kind of an acknowledgement that the initial reaction was a little bit of an overreaction, and I stand by my feelings, if I can justify that at all, is kind of like this was about optics versus what we're actually doing to players. Like, I will point out that in the same game, a Browns player made an illegal hit. I don't know why I'm just burying my team more here, but the Browns player made an illegal helmet-to-helmet hit on a receiver who then left the game with blood dripping out of his ear. I almost feel like the NFL was able to get everybody to forget that by, well, that makes it sound too conspiratorial. I think, though, that this is something that the NFL can kind of come in as an organization and act like white knights and say, we are throwing the entire book at this player because this is not who we are. We don't take off helmets and try to hit people with it, but there's no way that any damage caused or even potentially caused by this act of violence by Myles Garrett, which is inexcusable, compares to another player leaving the game with concussion, bleeding from his goddamn ear. And that happened in the field of play during, you know, between the whistles. And I think that that is actually something that is, even as a sports fan, I should say, is way more concerning. But this other thing was able to kind of take all the attention off of that.
Right. Like, if there's the not every sort of, not every dirty play or every unfortunate incident is created equal, and has a lot to do with, as we have already said, the optics. So if it's a play on the field like happened earlier, which was more, like you said, more catastrophic to the health of Juju Smith-Schuster, I believe, was he the one that went out with that hit?
He did go out with a hit, but I don't think he was the one who was bleeding. I could be wrong.
Wow.
Yeah, no, they sent out two wide receivers with concussions or in concussion protocol.
But like that, because those were on the field of play in a more traditional way, that's going to get less attention than Garrett swinging the helmet. The other thing that I was thinking of yesterday, and this is not even a dirty play, but I was texting about this with the group. There was a play in the Seahawks game where Hollister, who I'm very high on as a tight end because he's got real wheels and it's really fun to see him get the ball out in space. We haven't had a tight end like that. I mean, that was never even Jimmy Graham's thing. Like, Jimmy Graham would get touchdowns because he's tall. But, like, to have a tight end who Russell can hit in stride and he can really do some stuff is cool. So he makes this great catch and run. And then there's that moment where, and this happens sometimes, where a guy's getting tackled by the legs and then a defensive player comes over and pushes him back so that he's being bent back over his legs and body. And it's a way a lot of people get hurt. And I was, again, I was, you know, in my feelings about the Seahawks at that moment because the game was still kind of up in the air. But I was like, how is that not an illegal hit? Like, if you want to try to protect the players, obviously concussion is a big deal. But there's got to be a rule about if a person is already being tackled by the feet and they're stopped. Not just like, I know that it's like you're tackling a big adult male who doesn't want to be tackled. It's hard to do, and they're gonna make it difficult. So it's like it's hard to account for everything. But it seems like that's something that the NFL has never even thought about trying to make illegal. But I see more players get hurt on that play. Do you know the kind of play I'm talking about?
It's almost like – is it like almost what a bully would do in high school, like crouch behind you and then the friend pushes you over?
Well, kind of, yeah. So it's like a guy's on the ground tackling Hollister. He's got Hollister by the legs, meaning Hollister's legs are no longer moving and they're kind of in a certain position. And then another player for the Eagles comes and like tackles Hollister's upper body.
Yes, I remember this play.
So that he's now being bent backwards like a paperclip, and you could see it happening because Hollister's feet are trapped under this other player. And again, I don't know how you –
you blow the whistle sooner. I mean, I am not somebody who says blow the whistle sooner. I hardly ever say that. But in this case, he was going nowhere. And didn't there become like three defenders on him? There's one guy down below. There was one guy. And then the third guy comes in and twists him up. And I'm screaming, blow the goddamn whistle. The play is over. Like, the play is over.
Right, and you see him. And he limped off the field. Luckily, he was able to come back. But, I mean, that could have been a season-ending injury because of his feet being planted, being stuck behind him, his cleats are in the grass, he's being doubled over, and yeah, there's like two or three players doing it. You're right. It's not even really so much the Eagles players as it is the referee in that case needs to realize there's no forward progress being made by Hollister. But I guess my point is just that I feel like I'm with you that this is a weird game, a weird sport, because there are a lot of things that are probably arguably worse for players that don't get flagged the same way that like what happened with Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph was, because it hurts the image of the NFL in a way that they're very, very sensitive to.
Yeah, and this was something that they could really take a stand on. And again, I mean, I know that I'm getting very close to kind of dismissing the charges against him, which I'm really not. Like, you need to stay in control. What was the scariest thing about that for me, and maybe this just goes to, things that are developed in us in childhood and hearing mom and dad fighting and the feeling it gives us, but like that, seeing a human being lose control in the moment like that, like we've all seen the replay a million times, but in the moment where I'm just like suddenly filled with this feeling that is the opposite of the feeling I had 2 seconds earlier, because I'm watching this man literally lose control, and in this case a very big man, a very big tough man, just literally seeming to lose control of his functions, and all he can do is be a rage machine in that moment, like that's really upsetting. So I understand.
Yeah.
I understand why they threw the book at him too. I don't want to dismiss
it. Right, but it's also, I mean, this was discussed endlessly then. You might talk about it with Phyllis. We don't need to bore people with this anymore. But one of the thoughts I had about that, about why that was so troubling, is because football is an extremely violent thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that we can cognitively sort of apply cognitive dissonance to it is to have all these weird rules around it. And then when somebody breaks out of, I mean, it's very much a gladiator sport.
Mm-hmm.
And when one of the gladiators starts climbing up the wall and coming into the general, which isn't what happened in this case, but it's when something breaks that ring of imaginary safety around it,
mm-hmm.
it's really troubling to the league, because we're forced on some level to confront with what the real fuck is going on.
Exactly.
With these
games. Well put.
Wow. Are we going to end on an actual high
note? I think
note
we
for
should. Like,
let's
not ruin this.
I bet you I could ruin it in 8 seconds.
Luke, put your helmet back on.
Okay. All right. It's on. All right. That's going to do it then. We will be back here. Oh, I guess we'll maybe on Tuesday because of the
Seahawks are Monday night. So that would make
Monday
sense.
Night football. So
yeah,
we'll see you in a week and a day, and hopefully we'll have – Hopefully we'll. I mean, again, this is going to be a tough one for me because I do love the Minnesota Vikings fans, and not just the ones that we know personally, but just the whole The whole region I find to be a lovely place. So I take no joy from the Seahawks winning. I guess the silver lining will be if the Seahawks don't prevail, I'll be happy that it was against Minnesota and not some other team. So
yeah,
there's
I
that.
Agree. Better than Green Bay.
Indeed. All right, that's going to do it. Here's the part where I try to remember. I just need to get a tattoo. Is it note?
You know,
note
have
fact?
You wait? Have you heard of notepads? Like you don't have
oh,
to.
What are those?
You
don't, is that where you get tattoo. A tattoo? Is that where you get a tattoo of a piece of paper on your body yeah. with writing on
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's what it is. Right.
Oh, I should get one of those. All right. As we tend to say at the end of the show, I think no detail too wrong
and no tangent too long.